630 Chen, Alberta's information superstation.
Heartland of America and the gateway to the West. Good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. The world is looking at us and how we as people handle this tragedy in the wake of Hurricane Katrina. But there appears to be a breakdown in social order, almost like a Twilight Zone movie, becoming predators in the heat of rising tension. $10.5 billion in aid will now go to New Orleans and to also try to fix some of the problems in Mississippi, in Alabama. $10.5 billion. But in New Orleans, all they needed was $250 million to patch up the levee. That was the money that was allocated elsewhere. Who is to blame for this tragedy? I'm not so sure we can point fingers directly. One would look at the Clinton administration for failing to appropriate funds. One can look at the Bush administration for failing to appropriate funds as well. So I think the blame might be with all of us for simply sitting back watching this happen, when everyone knew that the city of New Orleans was always potentially in danger of a massive hurricane. It struck. And beyond the money, the $10.5 billion, the loss of life, that cannot be replaced. More on that in a moment. Next hour, by the way, on Coast to Coast, Lucid Dreaming with World Authority Stephen LaBerge, followed by Russell Togg with Dream Telepathy. Violence and chaos erupted as the evacuation efforts in New Orleans, with thousands of National Guard troops pouring into the city to boost security in the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina. This is a desperate SOS, according to the New Orleans mayor. He was saying this outside the New Orleans Convention Center, where corpses lay in the open, and he and other evacuees complained that they were dropped off and given nothing, no food, no water, no medicine. "We are out there like pure animals. We don't have help," said the Reverend Isaac Clark. Meanwhile, Louisiana Governor Kathleen Bianco said everyone is concerned for the dead who cannot be picked up until all of the living are found and brought to safety. Fights and trash fires broke out at the hot and stench-filled Superdome, and anger and unrest mounted across New Orleans as the first of nearly 25,000 refugees being sheltered at the Superdome began to arrive in Houston. Thousands of people rushed from nearby hotels and other buildings, hoping to climb into the buses, taking evacuees from the arena. It is clear that we are not prepared for major disaster. The United States is now finding itself on the receiving end of help from around the world, as some two dozen countries are now offering post-hurricane assistance. It took a while for these countries to begin to get on the bandwagon, but it's finally happening. Venezuela, a country that was fingered by the administration as being a potential enemy, offered humanitarian aid and fuel. As a matter of fact, a major corporation in Venezuela has pledged $1 million donation for hurricane aid. The United States informed U.S. Ambassador John R. Bolton that it was prepared now to accept help from the United Nations in any way possible. Israeli Prime Minister Ariel Sharon sent a letter to President Bush offering hundreds of doctors, nurses, technicians, and other experts in trauma, natural disasters, and public health. They are ready to be shipped to the United States immediately. And some notable people remain missing in New Orleans.
"You made me cry when you said goodbye. Is that a shame?"
Blues musician Fats Domino is among those missing after Hurricane Katrina. His agent, Al Embry, said that he had been not seen and been able to contact him since Sunday. The 77-year-old had told Mr. Embry that he was staying at his home in a low-lying area of New Orleans with his wife, Rosemary, and their daughter. Now hundreds, even thousands of people are feared to have drowned in the city where the hurricane struck, of course, on Monday. Al-Qaeda, news from them. The second-in-command, Al-Zawahiri, claims responsibility for the July 7th London bombings. He described the rush-hour bombings on underground trains and a bus as a slap for the policy of British Prime Minister Tony Blair. Al Jazeera aired footage of a man alleged to have been one of the suicide bombers, and he said he explained the reasons for his action on a tape. Al Bielek, you might remember his name from the Philadelphia experiment. That was that 1943 experiment where the United States Navy was supposed to kind of transport from Philadelphia to Virginia a destroyer. Something went wrong then. But Al Bielek in the hospital now in Florida with his second stroke. Al Bielek is 78 years old. In a moment, our guest will be Charles Ostman. We are going to be talking more about Hurricane Katrina this hour. He is an expert on global futures and serves the management team of Fourth Venture. He is an expert on the possibility of what may have happened with Katrina. Back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And the Miami Herald is now reporting that Fats Domino is among some of those people that have been rescued. So there's some potentially good news in a situation that, of course, is extremely tense. Charles Ostman is a senior fellow at the Institute for Global Futures and serves with the management team of Fourth Venture. He is an active participant with the Millennium Project for Global Future Studies and Research of the American Council for the United Nations University. Charles has more than 25 years' experience in the fields of electronics, material science, computing, and artificial intelligence, including 8 years at Lawrence Berkeley Laboratory at the University of California, Berkeley, and Los Alamos most national laboratory. He's our guest this hour on Coast to Coast. Charles, welcome to the program. So good to talk with you.
Thanks so much, George. I wish we could be talking in more pleasant circumstances, but I'm happy to participate on your program.
Oh, I agree with that. In this particular case with Katrina, now you look at it through different eyes. Tell me a little bit about your perspective here.
Okay, and I want to make this point clear that this is a theory, but it's a theory that I believe can be supported by a lot of evidence, and it's something that I simply want to have people take a close look at. And here the theory goes in two parallel paths. The first path suggests that the science, the technology for weather manipulation is well known, it's been practiced, it's been proven. The U.S., Russia, and I believe China to a certain extent, a lot of folks have shown by experimental evidence that this is quite doable. But then in parallel with this, there is a geopolitical path to suggest that there was a reason to implement this. And if you want to look at it as an attack of sorts, it was not necessarily an attack against New Orleans, although clearly people there are suffering terribly. The real target, in my belief, was the oil facilities. And as you have often said, there are no coincidences. I tend to support that view. And if you look at the timing of how this was positioned and the fact that if this was a manipulated weather contrived event, the perfection of this moment in time from that perspective, you couldn't ask for a better sort of a scenario. It's a way to create economic chaos. It's a way to create economic chaos at a time when we're most vulnerable. It would drastically affect our future potential for economic responses to certain kinds of challenges, and I'll explain what I mean in a few minutes. And more importantly, it's a way to implement this stealthily without having to leave necessarily a trail of evidence, as would be clear by a more obvious sort of pathway along these lines. So I'll try my best to kind of support both paths at the same time.
But you are now at least one of four people, Charles, that has come forward with this kind of potential theory. So it seems to be growing.
Well, it's certainly something that, again, just because of the sheer weight of the evidence, to not look at this, I think, would be ignoring the obvious. We have to recognize that we're living in a complicated age. We're living at a point where our perception of power in the world is really at a state of change, and there are many entities out there who, for their own long-term objectives, outside of Al-Qaeda and so forth, would like to see us taken down a peg or two so they can implement their strategies. I mean, I think China's the top sort of at that list.
All right. If this happened, if this was manufactured weather, how might they have done it? Where might they have been to do it? I mean, is this something you can be thousands of miles away and try to concoct? How do you think this occurred?
Exactly so. And in fact, not to tread on common waters, it's been talked about many times in the past, but many people probably know about HARP. That's the High Frequency Active Auroral Research Project.
Right.
And HARP, let me explain the history of this. This might be helpful. If we go back, clear back to the 50s, and certainly the early 60s, the original concept was to create something that could achieve what's called over-the-horizon radar. And there was a lot of reasons for this. I mean, clearly we wanted to be able to look at things from across the horizon line, incoming missiles, bombers in flight, that kind of thing. And both the Russians and the U.S. were actively participating in these kinds of ideas. As time went along, and especially with the SALT II treaty arrangements back in Nixon's time, one of the things that made SALT II possible was the fact that we had to be able to verify, both on the Russians and our side, the ability to communicate with all of our elements within what's called the nuclear triad. And forgive me for getting a little bit detailed here, but I just want to make sure
that's fine.
Well,
that's important.
In the nuclear triad, you have three basic components. That's missiles in the silo, bombers in the air, and then the nuclear submarines. Now, in the first two, the missiles in the silo and the bombers, chain of command was always absolutely enforceable. There was always a very precise protocol for being able to control release of these weapons or their usage in a theater of war. The exception to this was the submarines, because at that time, there was no direct communication link. Both commanders on both sides had the potential, under special conditions, where they could autonomously launch their missiles if they perceived the situation justified it. For very obvious reasons, if we were going to have a strategic arms limitation, and essentially if we were going to pursue a what's called MAD, or mutually assured destruction kind of a protocol to support this idea, then we had to ensure that the submarines would have as much of a rigid chain of command in terms of communication that the other two elements of the nuclear triad had. So to get to that point, people began to explore, well, what kinds of communication methods could be used to communicate with submarines no matter where they were in the world. It turns out that something like a HARP approach seemed to work. That is, the ability to aim a very precisely tuned beam of low-frequency radio waves at the upper atmosphere and then bounce them back down to a receiving site. And the submarines could release an antenna that could be towed behind them, and they could receive the messages, and therefore we could verify that both the Russians and us would have the same level of communication protocol, and this was a sort of a crucial ingredient to make the SALT II treaties work. Well, as it turns out, as we began to explore and develop this and deploy it, some other side aspects were noticed. One noticeably being that, gee whiz, when we started bouncing these high-energy radio frequency beams off the ionosphere, it would actually cause a thermal hotspot. It could actually create thermal patterns, if you will, by this process. Then it became considered that, well, gee, if that's possible, I wonder if we could do things like, for instance, change the direction of the jet stream, or could we, perhaps affect localized weather phenomena. And it really started off fairly innocently, really, because especially for the Russians, who were particularly interested in being able to affect weather in areas like, for instance, Siberia, they thought, well, maybe we could come up with some kind of a scheme so we could improve the weather and have more area for agriculture, that kind of thing. Well, from their perspective, it soon became obvious that this would be a way too costly scheme because of the energy requirements. But in terms of being able to create localized weather phenomena, it did seem to work surprisingly well. Now, many countries experiment with this. I mean, much of Northern Europe, Britain had a bit of a program at one point. I mean, a lot of folks kind of tinkered with the idea, most of which was just a very short-lived bit of experimentation. However, in the case of HARP on our side, and in the case of the Russians took this much more to heart than probably anybody else at the time. They really pioneered this and really turned it into kind of an art form.
So they are more advanced than we are?
By considerable measure. I mean, certainly in terms of the amount of money that they spent and by the number of facilities they created. People should notice there's many HARPs out there. It's not just like one machine. It's actually a whole variety of machines, and they're all over the world, really. But the Russians were particularly bent on investing large amounts of money and research effort into this because they felt that there was some substantial outcome.
Now, this is interesting, Charles, because 12 countries have offered assistance. Russia was another country. They would have made the 13th. We turned them down. We don't want anything to do with their help. I found that to be strange.
Yeah, well, let me point out a couple of data points that might be sort of in sync with this. You remember that 3 years ago, I believe it was, that they offered publicly to divert the pathway of typhoons in the Indonesia-Malaysia area. They were turned down, and this is partly because the United Nations, going back to the mid-70s, actually began creating a series of treaties that would restrict the usage of this kind of technology. And it's a complicated explanation, but for a bunch of diplomatic reasons, folks turned them down and said, well, thanks, but no thanks. Then 2 years ago, if you recall, the first recorded hurricane ever in history, excuse me, occurred off the coast of Brazil. This was very strange. Nobody could explain this at all. Meanwhile, around that same time, or about a year later, I should say, we saw this chain of hurricanes coming off the coast of Florida very tightly packed together, almost like a domino pattern. You know, that's happened before, but it was kind of surprising how precisely spaced and what, you know, sort of pattern these things formed up in. It was around that time that the India News Daily, which is kind of like the Wall Street Journal or the New York Times of India, a very credible, very mainstream
yes.
paper, published a rather interesting article that said, look, we have evidence to show that weather is being manipulated. We have our best scientists, our top-notch computer specialists, not just in India, but from all over the world, who kept saying, you know, we're looking at these weird phenomena that we cannot explain. And no, I don't think it's just from global warming. This is something much more specific. It has a much more short-term kind of pattern to it than what a long-term climate change would tend to indicate. And they and their top scientists were simply writing an open letter to the world saying, if anyone knows what's going on, please tell us, because we need to know what's happening here. Now, quietly, behind the scenes, that was considered to be quite a statement, because this was the first time that such admissions had been made in such a public way. But as I've said, it's common knowledge that this kind of experimenting has been going on for a long time. Where I think this is going, though, is that in the last 10 to 12 years, the technology has improved tremendously, and I can speak a little bit about this because of my own work at Los Alamos, although it goes back 25 years. My work was kind of in the area of ultra-high-density power supplies, at that time designed for driving big lasers and big particle beams mm-hmm. as part of the Star Wars program. But if you take a sort of a leap from that, the same general technology could be very well applied to these kinds of systems. And I, in fact, when I was on the air with Art, and I think that was back in May, after being on the air for 3 hours, the final question he asked me, we were talking about nanotechnology, which is my general field that I spent some of my time in, but he asked, he said, Charles, what in the world of nanotech can you say has to do with weather manipulation? I thought that was a pretty interesting question for him to ask. It was like in the last minute of the program. I said, well, okay, since he asked the question, three areas specifically, superconductivity, ultra-high-density power supply systems, which can benefit from new kinds of materials,
yes.
and certainly the ability to optimize the performance of antenna design, all three of which, when combined, make exactly the kind of platform that would make this kind of a system a doable technology.
In this case with Katrina, was she already formed? Was it already, let's say, a tropical storm, and then someone began to manipulate
yes,
it?
Yes, George hit the nail squarely on the head. I don't think anybody in their right mind could really conceive of trying to create a hurricane from scratch. The energy requirements would be way too far extensive. But certainly once a storm's already in that moment of transition, it's really just a matter of steering the storm and sort of getting to show up at the right place at the right time. That's what it's really about. And from that perspective, I think this is quite within the range of feasibility.
If this is the case, Charles, do you think our government is fully aware of this, or would they be listening to this broadcast, hearing people like you, Richard Hoagland, James McCanney, a meteorologist, over the past couple days, would they listen to that and go, oh, come on now, this is a bunch of nonsense, or are they really concerned about this?
I think that they are not only concerned, they're quite aware this can be done, and they probably have their own people sort of looking at this as we speak. However, would they ever be publicly acknowledging this? Probably not for some time. I think that the public personification, certainly the panic that would set in, would be astronomical. But, again, my purpose for making these statements is not to create panic or get anyone into trouble necessarily.
No,
but
I understand.
To say, these are something we should be considering, because if we are being led down a path where this kind of procedure is now considered part of a military option, it's important to recognize what the outcome of these kinds of practices might entail. And that kind of leads up to the geopolitical side of this. And as I was saying earlier, I believe China would be the sort of the most likely to benefit from this. And here's why I say this, and I'll just offer this as a kind of a theoretical scenario. Just imagine now, say 7 to 10 years from now, China comes to us and says, okay, look, we're going to take Taiwan, and I don't care if you like it or not, that's what we're going to do. But we're going to make you an offer you can't refuse, all right? It can either be done the hard way, or it can be done more quietly.
Uh-huh.
And so here's where the quiet part comes in. Right now, China is the number one owner of our debt. I don't just mean by trade deficit. I mean they've been buying up our treasury notes
oh,
and all the other debt instruments they can possibly get their hands on.
Billions of dollars.
Many. I mean, we're approaching a fraction of $1 trillion at this point. And so the point would be, well, why would they be doing this? Well, to make short-term profit? Well, sort of. But I think they have a larger scheme in mind. This is very typical for Chinese strategy. The real play says, okay, look, guys, we can either have an all-out war, which nobody's really going to benefit from, or, I'll tell you what, we can kind of forgive some of the debt or work out some kind of financial arrangement if you turn a blind eye to Taiwan. I think this is exactly what they'd be up to, and it's very plausible given the considerations that their previous sort of practices consist of.
Is this considered, Charles, an act of war?
It depends on whose definition, but I can say this much. If you just do a bit of a web search, and certainly if you read a lot of the documents I have over the past 20 years, this is considered warfare. This is as much warfare as tanks or ships landing on the shore of somebody's country. But for many people, this is a hard thing to wrap their minds around because it seems so far out.
I'll tell you another thing, and Charles will be back with you in a moment, and I'll open up the phone lines as well while we continue this dialogue with Charles Osterman. I bet sociologists, psychiatrists, philosophers, you name it, are looking at this case because of the behavior of people now and all this and the way it unfolds. In a moment, we're going to get the Hurricane Katrina aftermath update from Richard C. Hoagland, and then we'll be right back with our guest Charles Osterman right here on Coast to Coast AM. I'm George Norrie.
Good morning. It's 3:30 from the 6:30 Chad 24-Hour News Center. I'm Jeff Samsono in Edmonton. It's 14 degrees. Things don't seem to be getting a whole lot better down in New Orleans. Mayor Raina Jin now issuing a desperate plea for help because people are dying in the streets. There's also carjackings, looting, gunfire. Tens of thousands of people have no shelter, food, or clean water, all in the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina. They complain there's no sign help's on the way. And there also have been incidents of people shooting at supply helicopters.
Throughout the program, we will be having the aftermath updates of Katrina. Richard C. Hoagland, of course, has been doing the work for us, our science advisor and the head of the EnterpriseMission.com. And Richard, now another person coming forward with theories that you and Scott Stevens, James McCanny have been talking about for a long time.
Yes, I'm really gratified to hear Charles basically echoing what appears to be more and more apparent, that this is part of a global weather war that's being clandestinely conducted and not acknowledged. What I find astonishing, and you can ask Charles later, but it seems to me if our guys are aware of this, the degree of obvious unpreparedness in terms of disaster relief after this natural act of God has to go down as historic. I mean, tonight we have the closing of the Astrodome in Houston a few hours ago, turning away buses of people who would track 7-8 hours from the Superdome, the hellish conditions there, who are literally now wandering around in the night in Texas without a place to go. I have never seen a disaster more mismanaged, and this must raise all kinds of extraordinary questions, not the least of which is, why are our guys out to lunch?
I know it, Richard. You know, we have spent billions of dollars on Homeland Security ever since 2001. We have given FEMA billions of dollars to do whatever they do. And it just seems to me there is a total breakdown in organization out there.
This is so astonishing and staggering. I mean, we have a military that has stuff in warehouses, everything from generators to boats to lights to, you know, ready-to-eat meals that could be brought in by helicopter, airdropped to these people. There are 20,000 people tonight, something like that, at the New Orleans Convention Center in downtown New Orleans who have nothing. They have nothing to eat, no water. There are people dying, pushed up against the walls. There are mobs, there are looters, there are people with rifles, snipers. This is, we're watching, you know, what was that movie, that Australian movie that Mel Gibson?
Mad Max.
We're watching Mad Max on television, and none of the authorities, none of the people that we pay taxes to, that we turn to for, you know, organization, seem to be doing anything. All we are getting is platitudes from the politicians, people patting themselves on the back, while real people are dying in New Orleans. And if this is part of the war that I talked about on your show and Scott Stevens and Jim McCanny's talked about and now Charles, Americans need to wake up. We have got to take back this country. We've got to begin by asking hard questions about people. What did you know, and when did you know it, and why weren't you prepared for an unfolding catastrophe of biblical proportions?
Indeed, and let's not forget, however, the really heroic efforts of men and women out there who are doing everything they can to save as many
people. Well, the men and women in the front lines are the real heroes, because you
Absolutely.
See people being plucked off roofs. Operating those helicopters, George, as you know, around those power lines is the most dangerous form of rescue you can have.
And now they're getting shot at.
And being shot at the same time. This should not be happening in an American city, you know, in an American region, because we don't want to forget that there's also Mississippi and Alabama, and 1 mile and a half going inland from the Gulf of Mexico, it has been completely erased as if no structures ever existed. This was a monstrous storm, a monstrous weapon, if we're all right that it was a weapon. And I'm hoping that the people who are going to ask Charles questions will ask him the key question, which is, what do we do about this next time?
All right, Richard, we'll talk to you during our next update. Richard C. Hoagland, EnterpriseMission.com, back with Charles Osterman in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie with our guest, Charles Osterman. Charles, I assume that this has been used before. This is not the first time.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, I was going to bring up, and I thought that Richard made a very, very well-worded sort of summation of the scenario. It's hopelessly tragic. I have a lot of friends in New Orleans area, and it's just really a painful thing to watch. And yet, I like to say that, again, I don't think New Orleans was a target. I think that was just a very unfortunate sort of a side issue to the larger target, which, of course, was our oil facilities there. But let me just read you a couple things that I think you might find sort of interesting. In February 25 of 1998, there is the, and I'm quoting directly now, this is the Radio Frequency Weapons and Proliferation Potential Impact on the Economy Congressional Hearing. And the witnesses who testified this hearing include the following: James O'Brien, Department of Defense; David Schreiner, Electronic Warfare Associates, which is a consulting group; Dr. Ira Merritt, Missile Defense Space Tech Center; and Dr. Alan Kays from the U.S. Army Research Lab. Now, this was in 1998 to a congressional committee, so clearly these folks were very much up on this idea. They knew it was that this potential existed, and they were already looking at the economic warfare aspects of how this could be applied. So nobody can tell me that this was not something that people weren't thinking about or thinking about now. Now, if you want to play a kind of a Machiavellian scenario game at this, and I'm not necessarily a conspiracy sort of guy, but, you know, I'm actually trained to do this kind of thing. So, I mean, one thought would be, let's just say for a moment that we had to show by some kind of, activity that we don't know about this kind of thing. So what better way to show that than to kind of pretend, and it pains me to put this in this way, but pretend that we don't know how to respond and this was a big surprise and, my gosh, we never expected a hurricane would ever cause as much damage, et cetera. So maybe the seemingly ineptitude of all these different agencies who, I mean, Rich is right. I mean, I can't imagine in my mind of minds how it could be that we could have such spectacular resources and yet be completely unable to deliver them to, you know, a city within our own country, let alone, you know, somewhere else in the world. I look at this and I think there's something really wrong with this picture. So maybe, just a wild thought, but maybe this is part of the ploy, is to suggest that, well, we've never heard of this and this is completely impossible, and therefore we were caught with our pants down, kind of like 9/11 in a way. You know, that's just a crazy thought, but it means a thought that crossed my mind, because I can't think of another logical explanation for why we are so disorganized and unable to really deal with the most immediate problems at hand. It just seems...
And you would not expect us to be this disorganized, especially after 9/11.
Absolutely. And you know, this is if we really are this inept, this is truly frightening, because God forbid there should be, let's say, a small nuclear device or something else of an equally horrible nature released, and that could absolutely happen. If we're not able to deal with a so-called natural disaster, what's going to happen when something of a much more military, you know, overtly military action occurs, which I think probably will occur at some point?
Charles, answer this quick message I've just got in off my fast blasts and emails before we go to calls. People are stacking up to talk with you this hour. And this simply is from a listener who simply says, look, your guests are all nuts. Come on, manipulating the weather, give me a break. How do you answer that?
I'm sorry to say that this is hard science. It's not conjecture or theory. It's been done. It's been shown to be a provable concept. I would certainly invite anyone not to believe me at all, but simply to do their own research. And I think they'll be surprised when they begin to dig into the topic more in earnest. But there's a lot of published papers about this. Scott Stevens, by the way, who I've been studying his site, he's done remarkably good work in sort of really giving a very detailed, very logical case for this. And interestingly enough, in that India News Daily publication I was talking about, they have a picture of a typhoon as part of the lead-in for the article. And if you look closely, I'm not kidding, you can actually pull it up yourself, you will see a small rectangular patch of a cloud formation right in sort of near the core of the actual of the hurricane or of the typhoon. This was classic Scott Stevens, 101. I mean, I thought, my gosh, here's the Indians taking a picture from what, you know, they thought might be an example, and there was Scott Stevens' evidence, like, right there in the picture. Yeah. So, I just look at this. But, again, I invite anyone not to believe me. I'm just a voice in the radio. Do your own research. You know, spend some time. Dig into it. I think you'll be interested in what you find.
Let's go to the phone's wild card line. Where are you calling from? Hi there.
Hi. I'm calling from San Antonio.
Okay, go ahead, dear.
First of all, I want to tell you I listen to you on WAI, and I listen to you frequently.
Thank you so much. Go ahead with your question.
My question has to do with the planes that fly up and down to measure the eye of the storm.
Hmm.
I want to know, what does that have to do with this? Does it affect the eye in some way? Does it help to chop holes in it, or does it not?
The best of my knowledge, those planes are really just designed to monitor. They go into the storm, they make measurements, they have a lot of instruments on board, but they're not really affecting anything. They're just there to monitor and sort of track the storm event and take data. That's the best of my knowledge.
Has our government, Charles, ever, and we've had Nick Begets on this program numerous times, has the government ever publicly acknowledged what the heck HAARP is supposed to be doing?
Well, you know, this is funny. The Air Force had a website, believe it or not, which dates back a number of years, where they talked about not just the military, but also peaceful applications of affecting the weather for all kinds of purposes. And more recently, that website has been taken down. I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah, how about that? East of the Rockies, where might you be? You're on Coast to Coast.
Yes, hello?
Yeah, where are you?
Yeah, in Chicago.
Okay, go ahead, sir.
All right. I want to verify what he's saying, also to sustain what he's saying, whether the other ones, people who called, don't believe you. I do believe you. If you remember that report from Iron Mountain that said they wanted to get rid of 2.5 million people here in the United States, 3.5 billion off the planet? If you remember, I think it was Igor Prokofievich or Igor Prokofievich who said that he had a card marked weather made to order, and the Lata, the one that they built in Russia, which is three times more powerful than HAARP, which they pointed in a pyramid rather than a rectangular shape with a 36 array. Also, again, if you remember, too, that they just had that submarine that they found at the bottom down there that the British had to rescue. Nobody asked what the submarine was doing down there, what they were doing in the ocean. So I say simply, again, if you wanted to eliminate people, and many of those people now that are dying are black people, and I simply say there is racism. I'm not saying that that's what caused the HAARP situation, but that's the situation because those people lived in projects there. And when they got rid of them, there's no place for them to go. Tell me now why in a country where you're in a state where your president lives, you can't find a place or some kind of way to house those people, to have, since they know the trucks are coming, to have food and clothing for those people. No, I think this is a catastrophe in the making. I think, again, what you say is very true, and I hope people will begin to listen to what you say rather than doubting you.
Well, the one thing I will say, and I say this as a white person, I am grievously much in agreement in the sense that I think that there are certain people out there who see other people as like the expendable ones, and I use that term very painfully in a way, but your perceptions are not that far off. I think that there are some strategic planners out there who suggest that the world is overpopulated, that there are certain people who can be sort of gotten rid of and, you know, sort of like make a more efficient plan, as it were. This is not new talk, and I look at the continent of Africa probably as the worst example of this, but I think that this is not that far out at all, and I'm sorry to say this, but I tend to agree with you in many cases.
Well, and the other unfortunate part, Charles, is it hit a city, it hit an inner city, and minorities right now are living primarily in the inner cities. The inner cities, therefore, have that racial makeup, and it is very unfortunate that nobody has a plan in case anything happened. I mean, in New Orleans especially, they should have realized that eventually these levees were going to break if they weren't going to keep patching them.
I find it extremely interesting, and this is already common knowledge, but let's reiterate this, that, as I think you were mentioning earlier, the Scientific American articles and the other articles that came out that specified this, that FEMA's own funds were cut almost to non-existence, that the Army Corps of Engineers funds were stripped almost nothing in the last 2 or 3 years. I just look at this and I think, wait a minute, this is a really bad dot pattern. So, I mean, to suggest that nobody knew this was going to happen or that they were unaware of the consequences, I'm just not going to buy it. I'm sorry, the evidence is too strong to go the other way.
What about this movie Oil Storm, which came out in June?
Yeah, I know. I didn't see
that.
Yeah, I know. It's almost as if somebody wrote the script and then they're actually playing the script out in real life. I know. It's hard to believe, but it's true.
Maybe they said, let's run the movie before the actual event occurs.
Well, you know, you mentioned the psychology a bit earlier, which I think is interesting because a lot of the work that we do is exactly this kind of thing, looking at the sociodynamics of behavior and that kind of thing. And I think that many people still look at the weather as like an act of God, quote unquote. And let me just toss a couple of thoughts out. The concept of what is confined to the act of God is becoming ever more, those boundaries are getting pushed ever further back. If you go backwards in time, say 100 years ago, look at medical science, look at a lot of scientific phenomena that couldn't be explained through other means, a lot of things that occurred were called acts of God because there was no logical explanation. But as science became more well-developed and we could begin to explain things, we had to kind of revise what we had to confine to the worlds of sort of spiritual interpretation, even to the point of legal definitions, you know, insurance companies, banks, and so on that had to evaluate risk based on acts of God. That whole realm is sort of being turned on its ear because we're no longer really able to say specifically are things like plagues and certain diseases and certain epidemics, as well as things like earthquakes and weather phenomena, are these really acts of God or are they something that were sort of contrived? These are all open questions which can now be challenged, and very technically so. So, I mean, a lot of people's belief systems are being sort of tossed up in the air. And as I said earlier, imagine the panic that would set in if this became common knowledge, where people began to really think that, oh my gosh, you know, the weather really is kind of a sort of a contrived process. This would cause social phenomena that I don't think anybody could really manage that well, in my
opinion. First time caller line, welcome to the program. Hi there.
Hi, Sean from Minneapolis.
Hi, Sean. Go ahead.
I was watching during the whole, like, nighttime while Katrina was making its way towards the Gulf Coast. And I was watching, and throughout the night, they said that the storm was getting smaller, and it went from a 5 to a 4. But, I mean, clearly from the devastation that has gone on in the Gulf Coast, it almost seems as if did it get bigger? I mean, did it really get smaller? I mean,
well, actually, here's the answer to that. It depends on where you steer the storm. And this is something that perhaps a lot of folks don't quite realize. But a storm is a very fluid thing. It kind of changes constantly. It has to derive its energy from a heat source that is water that's been heated up a little bit. And it has to have kind of a direction to go in driven by surrounding phenomena. So if one were able to predict how best to steer the storm towards those places where it could derive the most energy, and then it could build up the energy, and then, pow, it could just sort of shoot it in towards a target area, that's exactly what you could do. You could take actually a fairly small storm, but if you knew where to steer it, you could create a situation where the storm would magnify itself, and then you could have a much larger thing to deliver to the target in question.
I'll tell you one thing that just boggles my mind, Charles. And, you know, we were with increased oil prices before this happened.
I know. I get you.
I know it. And then you see this,
yep,
and the capacity wiped out. And I don't know. You know, you're right. You watch this this unfold, it just doesn't make any sense.
Well, it does make sense if, depending upon whose vantage point you want to look at this from. If you're thinking about China, who I think has long-term objectives, they would gladly kind of quietly put their hand on this. If you look at the Russians, who have the technology and are eager to sell this to whoever can pay the money for it, and then China and Russia are kind of close in bed with each other right now, that makes all the sense in the world. And, of course, you have third parties out there, maybe some of the oil entities, who kind of like this idea, really, because it sort of serves their purpose. I mean, there's a whole lot of different ways to look at this. I think it's not one, but really a collection of different entities who have their own particular agendas to fulfill.
How do we know the apparatus wasn't already sold to an entity that used it?
We don't, and that's my point exactly. There's a lot of evidence to suggest it probably was, and that these things, especially with modern technology, could be made smaller, more powerful, easier to transport, that kind of thing.
If this indeed is true, and if this is happening, and if they have gotten it down to this kind of science, the ramifications for this are truly uncalculable.
They are uncalculable unless you're willing to understand how to deal with it. And there's two separate worlds, and I'll say this kind of carefully. There's the world of what the public perception consists of. There's the world of the folks on the inside who sort of already know this game, and they're preparing to kind of play it in their own way. But you're right. From the general population's perspective, this is way off the charts. This is like science fiction, but, you know, it's actually science reality in a way. It depends on how you look at it.
Let's go get a last caller east of the Rockies. I've got about a minute for you. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi. Hello?
Yeah, go ahead, hon.
Your guest was talking about the hurricane that devastated New Orleans and also parts of Mississippi was man-made by some kind of apparatus. I'd like to know, do you think that the Asian tsunami was also engineered?
Well, that's a very interesting question, and I will tell you, and I don't have any direct proof of this, so I don't want to mislead you in any way, but there's been a lot of research on ultra-low frequency sound waves that can be transmitted into the ground as a way to cause disturbance along a fault line. Now, there has been research done on this. I mean, it's been done for years. There's no evidence that I know of that can support whether a tsunami was a contrived event. All I can tell you is that there's been a lot of research in that area.
All right, Charles, I want to thank you again so much for sharing your views on this subject. And I got to tell you, it's going to be a while before we heal mentally and physically on this one. You know,
I can only suggest this may be the beginning rather than the last episode along these lines.
Unfortunately.
Unfortunately.